In today's installment of Tech Talk, where we tackle the latest news in technology, we're getting deep into a piece of Americana. A Ford truck that has been the most popular car in the U.S. for about 40 years and a fixture of American pop culture is going electric. Then I see an F-150. You're driving right through my mind, and every time I think I'm fine, I see the headlights of an F-150. That is just one of many odes to the popular pickup truck by Robin Ottolini. Ford's new F-150 Lightning is the legacy auto company's effort to take a beloved formula and make it electric and battery-powered. And they're not the only ones. Many car manufacturers are scrambling to jump into the electric vehicle market, which is currently dominated by Texas-based company Tesla, which holds about 70% of the market. Here in the Commonwealth, we are far from meeting our 2030 emission goals. So can this new vehicle, an electric pickup truck, realistically win drivers over in Massachusetts? Here to tell us more about his recent test drive of the F-150 Lightning is Hiawatha Bray, technology writer for the Boston Globe, and he is joining us for this week's Tech Talk. Hi.
Hey, glad to be here.
Very glad you're joining us to tell us all about your test drive. Was it fun? What happened?
Oh, it was incredibly fun. I mean, look, I like electric cars to begin with. I've driven Teslas and all kinds of other vehicles like this. I think they are innately some of the most entertaining things you could ever drive, and especially when you've got a 563-horsepower pickup truck that's entirely electric. It's like riding in a spaceship. It is absolutely delightful, and yet I still have my reservations about it as a truck. As a vehicle, it's insanely cool. It was one of the most pleasant driving experiences I've ever had. You're sitting in this vehicle. It's like being in your living room. It is the quietest thing. I mean, it's a truck, and it's the quietest thing I've ever ridden in my life. It has an amazingly soft, gentle ride, and of course, it has the insane acceleration that you expect from any electric vehicle. It's absolutely a magical vehicle. My reservations are almost entirely about this whole issue of battery life and endurance and whether you can deal with that in the context of an everyday work vehicle. If you're somebody who uses a truck for like entertainment or like camping or things like that, I think this is a pretty darn good choice. If you're using it to do construction work or plumbing or something like that, it might be if you're not driving very far. If you are, this could be a problem.
Well, take us on your route a little bit. What towns did you go through? Did you go on the interstate and rural roads?
I didn't have just one route. I just get in and drive. I'd go to Providence, or I'd go to Braintree, or I'd go to Boston and back and so forth, just to get a feel for what was going on, and also to sample the available accessibility of charging stations. I got a tip from one guy that was kind of cool, and it makes perfect sense if you think about it. You know where they got free electric car charging? The casino. Yeah. The casino. They got it. It's right down there in the basement parking lot, and it makes perfect sense. They got the chargers. They're sitting right next to the elevator. You pull up, you put in your car, and then you get out, walk into the elevator, and you're surrounded by these slot machines. And it's like, you know, it's a total casino, and you can see the logic of it. These are what are known as level 2 chargers. They are basically connected to a 240-volt connection like the one you use at a dryer at home. And the problem with a level 2 charger is that it's going to take you hours to get a really substantial charge on the car. And that makes it perfect for a casino because they get you up in there and they get you gambling. But that's one of the key limitations, especially when you're dealing with something like a truck, where if it's carrying a heavy load, you're going to have a substantial drain on the battery. One of the things I did was attach a 2,000-pound U-Haul trailer. I didn't have anything to carry.
I was just going to ask if you towed anything, because that's what people get a pickup truck for.
Absolutely. I mean, Ford didn't give me the little ball thing that goes. I had to go to a.
You had to get your own tailgate?
The trailer hitch is there. I just had to go get the little ball thing, and I plugged it in there, and then went and got the U-Haul trailer. The battery listing, it said I had about 220 miles of range left before. As soon as I hooked it up, it recalculated and says, carrying this load, you only have about 100 miles of range left. And that's towing 2,000 pounds with nothing in the trailer. If this thing is rated for 7,500 pounds of towing. If you really filled it up, the load on the battery begins to become really substantial. Now, if you do the kind of work where you're not driving a lot of miles every day, that might not be a problem. If you're driving substantial amounts of miles with heavy loads, you got a problem here.
Was there any place in Massachusetts? You mentioned the level two chargers, right. They take forever. What about, was there a place that had a lot of level three or even any?
Well, not a lot of level three, but yes, there are places. You know, it's kind of interesting. There actually are a fair number of chargers out there now, if you know where to look for them. And, you know, they have all these special apps. And I didn't mention this in my story, but one of the challenges is different companies that run chargers have different policies. For example, in some cases, you have to download their app and sign up in order to use their charger. In other cases, you can just drive up, whip out a credit card, and use the charger. So it can be really confusing. Another major problem, almost none of these chargers have signs. It is the weirdest thing. You know, you're driving down the road, you're looking for gasoline, they got signs everywhere, gasoline, gasoline. There's almost nothing like that for chargers. There was one I found out in Brockton. I drove past it three times before I figured out it was a car charging site. Because the chargers themselves are tiny. They aren't very large. And if you don't know exactly where they are, you can't find them. They need to put up signs around these things. But last but not least, level three. This is extremely important. I plugged in this truck at about 40% power, and me and my son, we were in Providence. And we pulled into a Walmart parking lot, and there we saw it, glowing in the distance, a sign that read, Electrify America. This is important. Electrify America is run by Volkswagen. Remember how they had to pay billions of dollars to make up for lying about how their cars performed on diesel emissions tests? The settlement involved them having to build level three car chargers. They set up a company to do it called Electrify America, and they work great. You plug the truck in. Half an hour later, I went from 40% battery to 83% battery while I was in the Walmart just wandering around. That was really good performance there. And if you could recharge electric cars that quickly, then they suddenly become a much more practical option. But level three chargers are very rare right now. They are very hard to find. There's a new study out from the Edison Electric Institute. They are predicting, based on current proposals, that by the year 2030, there will only be about 40,000, 45,000 level three chargers in the entire United States. But they say the market is going to need 140,000 of them to really cover the country. Just by comparison, by the way, there are 145,000 gas stations in the U.S., just so you have a rough idea. So you need roughly that many level three chargers before this really becomes practical, and we're nowhere near that. And that's a huge problem.
So it sounds like it's a ways off before a lot more people are going to be rushing to get these cars, even the more iconic F-150.
Or the electric ones? No, look, these things are marvelous. I mean, this is just such a wonderful vehicle, but it's a chicken-egg thing. I got to throw in one more thing. There's this fascinating thing called demand charge. If you use an electric component, it's almost never used, it's almost entirely commercial industrial. If you do anything commercial or industrial that requires a huge surge of power, the electric company adds on this charge that can run into thousands of dollars called a demand charge to cover the need to pay for all the power plants and cables and everything to provide that much juice. Right now, there are so few electric cars on the road that if you spend all the money to set up a level three charger and then you have to pay that demand charge every month, you haven't got a chance of paying back the cost of putting in a level three charger. Once there are a lot of cars on the road, this demand charge problem goes away. But there aren't enough yet. And so all these companies are saying, I'm not going to put a level three charger in until there are more people on the road to use a level three charger. And we've got to figure out how to solve that problem.
It sounds like, it's almost just as expensive to buy the very expensive gas we have out there right now. How do those numbers add up? Do you know?
Well, no, actually, it was interesting because on the level three charger, when I went from 40 to 83%, and I forget how many of those I had, it must have been like 100 or some miles. Electrify America has a deal with Ford, so I didn't have to pay. But they told me how much it would have come to, and it was about $25. No, actually, that was about comparable to a gasoline car, today's gasoline prices, I thought. But if you're doing, for example, a level two, as I understand, it would be substantially cheaper than gasoline, but the time it takes to charge is a lot longer. So the problem is mainly that it takes forever to find a way to recharge your car. And millions of people, of course, you have to keep in mind, do not live in single family homes and don't have a place where they can set up their own charger and then connect it to their vehicle. So there are all these things compiled together that are making this a pretty expensive proposition.
Well, it sounds like you learned a lot from this experience.
Oh, yeah.
And even managed to have some fun.
Absolutely.
I do want to turn now to a little bit more pressing news of the day as well. We have spoken previously with you about privacy concerns with location data and the implications should the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade come to pass. Well, this law now has become reality. Can you remind listeners particularly of the privacy issues that you are worried about?
Well, no, this is about not just abortion at all. This is about abortion pushed the button that made people really start thinking, holy crap, there are all these devices I use every day that are tracking everything I do. They could be used to investigate me for abortion or countless other things. And it may finally be getting people off the dime to think about the need for some kind of a national privacy policy. And by the way, there's all kinds of stuff since I last talked about it. There's a great story that appeared in today's Washington Post about the fact that there's a calendaring app that Planned Parenthood uses, where you go in to sign up for an appointment to Planned Parenthood. An investigator found out that if you use that app, it's collecting your IP information, which could be used to find out where you are and who you are, and then giving it, or selling it rather, to Facebook and Google and other companies. So Planned Parenthood, you go in, you sign up, you're supposed to be signing up for some kind of a treatment, and they are able to, the people who are signing you up are sending the data about who you are to another company, and you don't even know what's going on. And that's just one example of how personal information about any of us is constantly being collected by all kinds of devices. We don't even realize it. Go back to the truck. Do you know that every time somebody else got in that truck with me, it knows? This has become common on modern cars. The car automatically detects whether there are other people in the car with you. So now that car knows where you are, what time you're there, and how many people are in the vehicle with you. And they can give that information to the police, they can give it to marketers, etc. I bring that up because I want to show that this is not just about the controversy of abortion. We are surrounded by devices that are constantly collecting data about us, and most of us do not know.
And quickly, because we have such a short time left, what are some specific policies that might be in the works or that tech companies can do to protect people seeking abortions?
Well, there are endless things that you can do to try to control your personal data. Some people are calling for example, there's the attempt to persuade Google to stop keeping records of where you go. Google could say, we are no longer going to store that information. Google and Apple have been asked to change their app policies so that the apps that collect this information will no longer be allowed to do so. Obviously, there's movement afoot to try to pass a national privacy law that would give us the right to tell companies, you can't collect this information.
And I can't wait to hear more about that with you later. That's Hiawatha Bray with the Boston Globe. Thank you, Hiawatha.
Oh, thank you.